Welcome to the Relatable Finance Podcast. Here are your hosts, Joseph Carl and Shane Phillips.
So welcome to today's episode of Relatable Finance. Today we thought we'd take a trip to the end of the rainbow and discuss gold as an investment, of course. We often get this question as someone to put their hard-earned dollars into something that they can actually touch or physically hold. We also get concerns from some who don't trust the government and devaluing the value of their paper currency.
Gold is definitely something we get a lot of questions on, and you see it pop up on the news quite a bit. It's definitely one of those assets that I think a lot of people think they should consider. Whenever I think of gold, all that I can think of is walking into the lunchroom and there's a commercial on TV saying, you know, sell my gold now. Now's the time to make money, or, you know, things are terrible. I need to buy gold and stock it up and save. And for whatever reason, it's always, you know, this white-haired guy on TV just wanting me to buy gold.
Yeah, one of my favorite slogans I think of all time is from gold commercials where it says, all good Americans buy gold. Nonetheless, one of the reasons that people invest in gold is because it is a store of value. Said another way, if you hold gold over the long term, you can expect the value of gold to maintain its purchasing power. But why gold? What about gold makes it a store of value and has prompted it to be used as a means of money throughout history? Well, if you go through the periodic table of elements, you can use the process of elimination to see why. First, you're not going to use something that's a gas or a liquid at room temperature. Next, you're not going to use elements that are highly reactive. Some elements are so common that it wouldn't really make sense to use them as a currency. Also, some are so rare or just have been found recently that they really don't have the history needed to be used as a currency. This essentially leaves platinum, gold, and silver as possible options. Gold, it's harder to melt and use gold or platinum because it takes a much higher temperature to do so. Also, silver is much more sensitive to corrosion, and voila, that's how we reach gold.
So I think your line of thinking is perfect. I'm sure throughout history they tried using a lot of other things and it didn't work for a lot of the reasons you stated. And like you said, voila, we have gold and it's been around for a long, long time. So let's look at some history. So doing some research, digging a little bit, I was able to find that all gold started with Donald Duck and him swimming through his gold coins.
That guy was such a visionary.
He really had a great idea back then, and lucky for the rest of us, he decided to spread that wealth and give out gold to the rest of the world. So we go back to 50 BC, we saw the Romans using a gold coin. Fast forward a little bit to about the 600s, and the first coins made of pure gold started to appear. Around 1100, you saw small pieces of gold legalized as a form of money. 1284, Venice introduced the gold ducat, I believe it's pronounced, which became the most popular coin in the world. And then we go to 1849, which was the gold rush here in the United States, which really brought gold into the United States.
Is that when they found all those Chuck E. Cheese coins?
I believe that was probably the 1980s, okay. But yes, definitely another step in history. But as you can see by the history of the gold coin, it's really been around for a long, long time. It's been a major form of currency over the vast amount of human history, and it's really only been more recently that it hasn't been used as that.
Yeah, so the U.S. has been on and off the gold standard throughout history, or at least some form of it. But most recently, we were on the gold standard in 1900, the year 1900, when the Gold Standard Act was passed. We officially went off the gold standard in 1933, which is during the Great Depression, as people were hoarding gold. And this was really preventing the government from properly stimulating the economy, because they had to exchange the gold for the dollars, etc. Nonetheless, the next major point in gold history is what was Bretton Woods. This was really the first example of a system between countries to govern monetary relations, which required the participating countries, the US, Canada, Western European countries, Australia, and Japan, to maintain the external value of the currency within 1% to the price of gold. The idea here was that some concerns and failures after World War I really led to the Second World War. And by tying everything to the price of gold, it would put everybody on a level playing field. At the time that Bretton Woods was passed, the U.S. held roughly two-thirds of the world's gold supply.
Bretton Woods was a really, really big turning point in the history of the United States, of the world, and what we're talking about today, gold. And it's probably one of those names that you hear it, Bretton Woods, and you kind of think of something, but you really don't know what. They also came away with the IMF and the World Bank from that, but it was really a hope for economic stability. Like you said, they had two world wars right before that, and coming out of this, coming off of the gold standard, it was really moving towards the U.S. dollar and the United States really taking more control from an economic perspective. And for all intents and purposes, the U.S. dollar kind of really becoming that global currency.
The next major development was when President Nixon closed the gold window, which allowed other countries to convert holdings of U.S. dollars into gold at a fixed price of $35 per ounce. With that, we officially moved into a fiat currency. That's what you drive, isn't it, Shane? A fiat.
That's such a terrible attempt at a joke. And I know this is a podcast, you can't see me, but I'm really shaking my head in disappointment right now.
Shane's clearly upset that he drives a fiat. Nonetheless, a fiat currency is when the currency is not backed by a physical commodity such as gold or silver, but rather the full faith and credit of the government. In this case, the value of the currency is based on supply and demand in the market and the perceived stability of the issuing government. While this may sound scary, governments actually want to pursue a stable currency, and by removing the tie to the price of gold, it actually enables governments to better use monetary policy to influence their economies.
Yeah, and I'm sure at the time it was crazy. I'm sure if you went from having a currency or some form of payment that was always backed and held its value to just trusting the government, I'm sure it was a crazy time, but it seems to have worked all these years later. And like you said, on the monetary policy front, I'm sure that was part of it, of the thinking back then. But fast forward to what has happened since then, and it's really made it that much easier to help control the economy to some extent. We can print money without having the gold to always back it up. But I really think back then they probably didn't think it would be as useful as it has been. But really going back to Bretton Woods, it's been a big, big change.
Yeah, so how has gold actually done as an investment? Well, if we go back to 1971 when Nixon closed the gold window, gold is up an annualized 7.8%. If we compare that relative to the S&P 500 over the same exact time period, the S&P 500 is up 10.6%. So relative to stocks, gold has underperformed by a little less than 3%. But something that we need to take into account here is that that hasn't been a really consistent 7% from gold. Gold's returns have really been clustered into certain time frames. It's not a really consistent return.
Yeah, so like you said there, it's perfect. It's definitely been clustered. If you look at it by the decades, going back 50 years, there's been a couple of decades where it's done really well. Gold did really well in the 70s and in the 2000s. And the most of those other decades, it hasn't done that well. So there's definitely that bunching effect. And a lot of that has to do with gold acting differently than stocks, especially in uncertain times. So if we just look at 1 year, for example, 2008, which is probably fresh in everybody's mind, stocks, U.S. stocks were down about 37%. Gold was up 5%. So it often reacts like that. And if we look at the 70s and the 2000s, when gold did well, stocks did not do well. So during the 70s, returns were positive for stocks, but they were very low. They had 3 years where the market was down double digits. And then for the 2000s, which a lot of people refer to as the lost decade, the S&P was actually negative, and they had 4 years where they had double-digit negative returns. So you can also see its use in diversification.
Yeah, some great points there, Shane. Next, is gold a good hedge against inflation? Remember, as we mentioned earlier, that one of the reasons that people invest in gold is it tends to maintain its purchasing power. And that does, in fact, hold up over the long-term time frames. Again, going back to the numbers we mentioned earlier, since 1971, gold has averaged around 7%. So it does tend to keep its purchasing power. But that being said, it tends to be clustered, and it's not actually a one-for-one correlation with inflation. So inflation picks up, it doesn't mean that gold's going to necessarily do really well. It's more along the lines of what perceptions of inflation is going to be, and when the perceptions of inflation start to pick up, that tends to be the time frame when gold tends to perform rather well.
Yeah, and we talked about one of the reasons to buy gold, the store of value, kind of the idea of uncertain times. This inflation hedge idea is another, and it's not exactly one for one, so it maybe isn't the best inflation hedge. Even if you look historically, it seems over a longer period of time to have done a pretty good job, but usually the price of gold does rise with inflation as the dollar loses some of its value, but definitely not a one-for-one hedge, so you should make sure you're buying it for the right reasons.
So what types of things are likely to help boost gold returns, or what is an attractive environment for gold? Well, something we need to keep in mind is that gold does not produce cash flow. What does that mean? Well, with bond, you receive coupon interest. With some stocks, you do receive a dividend. So when you're looking at gold as an investment, you need to consider the opportunity cost of that foregone cash flow. Another thing to keep in mind there, if interest rates or cash flow yields tend to come down, that tends to be a little bit of a better environment for gold because the lost opportunity cost of that cash flow is not as great as it would be in a higher yielding or high interest rate environment.
Well, whenever I get a question from a client regarding gold, that's usually what I go to, is the cash flow. Gold is gold. It's not paying you anything. It's not a company that's creating a product or a service. It's just gold. It's almost, maybe this is too simple, but like baseball cards. Baseball cards really don't have a value unless somebody else is going to pay you for it. So gold, like I said, is more valuable than that. But whenever we try to value stocks, it's always with cash flows. So whether it be actual dividends, earnings, growth rates, whatever the case would be, that's what you need to do to value stocks. And when you look at gold, it's tough to put a real value on it, and that's why people hold it for some of these other reasons.
Yep. Next, demand for gold is a big factor as well. Gold can actually be used in a variety of things. One of the areas that we all know about is jewelry, but there's also countries that have much higher demand, such as China and India, which have really, you know, as their economies and continue to grow and their middle class continues to expand, that demand factor is likely to be a bigger and bigger factor on the global supply and demand situation with gold.
Yeah, and in addition to actually being used, a lot of these foreign governments don't like holding possibly as much of the U.S. dollars. China, for example, holds a lot of U.S. treasuries, and if they don't want as much dependence on that, and this is what we've seen recently, is they've been increasing the amount of gold holdings they have for some of the reasons we've discussed so far.
Yeah, and lastly, we have something relatively new to consider, which is cryptocurrencies. Which are in some ways considered a medium of exchange and a store of value. Cryptocurrencies are relatively new. We don't necessarily know the future of those. Nonetheless, here recently, when I say recently, the price of Bitcoin and gold have been tending to move relatively in line with each other, which implies that the market's kind of viewing them as a similar function, a store of value, a medium of exchange.
Yeah, and part of the idea of cryptocurrencies is to get away from governments. It's its own system, kind of like gold would be. So that's why I think a lot of people look at it as kind of gold-ish. I think part of it's just nobody has a full idea on how to categorize cryptocurrencies, so they just look for something that may act similar, and gold definitely falls into that bucket. But longer term, we'll see if it ends up becoming kind of the new gold.
Yeah, so in summary, gold has been used as a medium of exchange in some form or another essentially throughout the bulk of human history. Really only the past 50 years or so have we used to move to a fiat currency where it's not backed by a commodity. Over the long term, gold has been an attractive hedge against inflation, but not necessarily a one-for-one relationship. Gold returns tend to be clustered in certain areas, and there's long periods where the returns aren't that great. Gold can be attractive as a form of diversification within a portfolio. If stocks aren't doing that well, in some cases, gold tends to do well. Not always the case, but it does tend to provide some diversification benefits. And today we need to consider other factors such as demand from international countries such as China and India, and also cryptocurrencies, which haven't been around that long. We're not sure of their future, but they have been moving in line with the price of gold here very recently. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Relatable Finance and tune into our next episode.
Provenance Wealth Advisors is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services, Inc. Securities are offered through Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered through Provenance Wealth Advisors and Raymond James Financial Services Advisors, Inc. Any opinions are those of Relatable Finance Podcast and PWA, and not necessarily those of Raymond James. The information contained in this report does not purport to be a complete description of the securities, markets, or developments referred to in this material. there is no assurance that any of the trends mentioned will continue or forecasts will occur. The information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but Raymond James does not guarantee that the foregoing material is accurate or complete. Any information is not a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision and does not constitute a recommendation. Investment involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected. Diversification and asset allocation do not ensure a profit or protect against a loss. Investing involves risk, and investors may incur a profit or loss. Raymond James does not provide tax or legal services. Please discuss these matters with the appropriate professional. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Future investment performance cannot be guaranteed, and investment yields will fluctuate with market conditions. Any examples given in the podcast are for illustration purposes only. Actual investor results will vary.